first guest of the Book Hour. It's the Bradford-based award-winning novelist and writer, Michael Stewart. Michael's a Bronte expert, and his latest novel, Ill Will, explores the untold story of Heathcliff during the lost years before he comes back to Wuthering Heights. Now, it's described as capturing the atmospheric appeal of Wuthering Heights, which is one of the nation's all-time favourite novels, and a novel which has been picked up for a TV deal as well. So he's going to be rolling in it soon, no doubt about that. Pleased to say that Michael Stewart joins us in the programme. Hi, Michael, how are you?
Hi, Johnny. I'm good, thanks. Yeah.
So I spoke to you last. It would have been about 6 years ago when you released King Crow. Maybe even longer. Maybe
I think it was longer. Yeah, 2011.
So seven years ago. Yeah. And I think that was your first novel.
Yeah.
That would be. And you've been pretty busy in the meantime.
It's my fifth book. Yeah. It's my third novel, and it's my first foray into historical writing.
Yeah. It's a, I guess it's a bit of a risk when it comes to the Brontes, because people are very protective over the Brontes, aren't they? There is something about them. We have an incredibly passionate community of Bronte lovers around here and across the globe, I think it's fair to say. But you're involved at the Parsonage already, aren't you? So you have that foot in the Bronte world.
I'm a Bronte Society member, and I know some of the staff. And I'm not involved directly. Certainly, I found the museum a good resource when I was researching the book.
Is it based at Haworth, where the Parsonage is?
Well, Top Withens is said to be the most likely location for where Emily meant Wuthering Heights to be. So that's where I've set the early part of the book, you know, as he's running off. The book basically takes off sort of 20 minutes after he runs off in the storm. So he's 20 minutes away from wherever you can get from Top Withens, really.
So this is 1780. The storm, isn't it? Is that right?
The storm is in the summer of 1780.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, now look, I'm gonna in the interest of honesty and openness, and I don't know how you're gonna feel and whether you're gonna walk out the studio. Do you know what I'm gonna say? I've never read Wuthering Heights. 2 weeks ago, I picked up a copy from the charity shop with the express intent of reading it. I haven't got round to, but I will now after today. I promise. I will start reading it. But for an idiot like me that isn't that familiar with the minutiae of the story, take us up to that point and why you felt it was important to fill in the gaps after he disappeared in the storm.
Well, it's a farm in the middle of nowhere, really. And in 1771, Mr. Earnshaw, who's the father, goes to Liverpool without stating his reason, really. He just goes off in the middle of summer. He's a farmer. You know, why would he go off at his busiest time? But he does. And he walks there. He doesn't take the coach, which goes from Keighley to Liverpool. He doesn't take any of the horses that are in the stables, or at least two horses in the stables at the time. So it's very curious what he does. And he walks there and back in 3 days. And I did this walk myself.
Did you?
Last summer, yeah. And it took me 3 days to get there.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's some going.
So he was going at it. You know, he didn't sleep. He probably didn't stop to eat. He got there. Maybe had an hour or two, and then came back again. So I was very, very sort of interested in that. But it is, he comes back, and he comes back with this orphan, in inverted commas, this orphan child, whose ethnicity is ambiguous. He's described as a Lascar, which in itself is an ambiguous term. It could be someone from India or Arabia or even North Africa. He's also called a gypsy, black as the devil. There's always terms used. He's also speaking gibberish. Again, this is Nellie Dean, who's the housekeeper. So we infer from that this is a foreign language. Yeah. So he comes back from Liverpool with this orphan child. He's gone, come back, he's got a fiddle for Hindley, he's got a whip for Cathy, and he's got this child. And he's not welcomed. The child is spat at, is kicked. Even Mrs. Earnshaw, you know, is not welcoming. And really, it's a kind of cuckoo in the nest story. So he's in this kind of world where he is an outcast, where nobody wants him. And eventually, him and Cathy form an alliance, and they fall in love. And this is the big sort of emotion in the story. But Heathcliff has no social status. He's a stable boy. And she is proposed to by Edgar Linton, who has status, has social status. She doesn't love him, but she agrees to marry him. She's telling Nellie this one day in 1780 when and Heathcliff is hidden in the other room, but he overhears a conversation, and she says that it would degrade her to marry Heathcliff. He doesn't hear the rest of the conversation. He doesn't hear that she doesn't really love Edgar, that she really loves him. He doesn't hear any of that stuff. He just runs off at this point. And that's where my book kind of kicks in, really.
And how long is that period?
So he's away for 3 years And when he comes back, he's quite a changed character. Essentially, when he left, he was a humane figure. He was a bit coarse. He was a bit rough around the edges. He was a stable boy. Little more than a slave, really. I mean, he was kept in a shed and beaten, and you know, he had a fairly sort of brutal experience. But when he comes back, he's changed. He's educated, he's extremely wealthy, and most markedly, he is a psychopath, really. He's got psychopathic tendencies. He's cruel, he has no empathy, he's a wife beater, a rapist, possibly a murderer. He's cruel to animals. I mean, so he's changed quite markedly in those 3 years, and that's what kind of interested me, really. How and why?
So, well, I guess when you have a character that changes that much, there has to have been an interesting story for those 3 years. Is there any intimation or indication about from Emily Bronte where she thought he had been, or what she thought he had been up to?
No, I mean, it's very curious, actually. Emily Bronte spends the first 9 chapters quite a lot of effort, actually, in having us sympathise with Heathcliff. So she shows him as the underdog who's beaten, who's starved, who's abused in lots of different ways. And when he comes back, she spends the rest of the book really trying to put us off Heathcliff and turn against him.
Right.
It's a very odd thing for a writer to do, really, to spend so much effort invested in this character to make the reader sympathise and then spend the rest of the book doing the absolute opposite. But there's never any kind of explanation as to what's happened in those 3 years.
So without giving a huge amount away, because obviously you want people to read the book to find out, but where did you decide he had been and what had shaped that personality so drastically in the meantime?
Well, Emily Bronte, and what she does so well in Wuthering Heights is she focuses the camera inwards. You know, it's a very claustrophobic book. It stays in the interior of Wuthering Heights, mostly. That's where it is. I mean, people associate the moors with Wuthering Heights, but actually there's only 5 lines of description of the moors.
Really?
In the
book. That few?
So what interested me really was shining the, or turning the camera outside and having a look round, because it's 1780. It's a very, very interesting time for the north of England. It's the Industrial Revolution, and particularly in Manchester, you're seeing a huge exponential growth. You go from 25,000 people in 1750 to 100,000 people in 1800. So it's quadrupled in 50 years. So I take him out. I take him, first of all, to the rural industries, to the farms, and you see how there is dissent there, how people are being made homeless by the Enclosures Acts. There are squatters, there are beggars. Remember that vagrants is a crime at this time. Mm. You know, you're publicly whipped if you're a vagrant at this point in Northern England. So there's the Industrial Revolution. There's the whole kind of thing that's going on. There's a kind of cultural revolution, I suppose. But ultimately where I take him is to Liverpool, because this is where, you know, Mr. Earnshaw has allegedly found him. And Liverpool at this point is the centre of the slave trade. It's the biggest slave port in Europe. And 80% of our income, England's income, was through the slave trade. So
80% at that time?
80% at this time. And it was a bustling port. There was over 100 fleets based, these are slave fleets, based at the Port of Liverpool. Much bigger than Manchester. So you can just imagine, you know, what kind of metropolis it was. And that's where I take him to. And he goes there to discover who he is, really, because he's not Heathcliff. I mean, that's a name he's given.
Mm.
So he wants to find out his origins, who his parents are, where he's come from, and so forth.
What's the response been like from the... Did you have to seek permission from the Bronte Society? Does it work like that? Could you be a bit of a rebel and just do it without their authority?
Yeah, I mean... It's out of copyright, so you know, there's no permission required, really. Anyone can write anything they want, really, about Wuthering Heights.
But they are very protective.
But there is, of course, there is a kind of coterie of people around the Brontes. I mean, I hope I haven't, you know, ruffled too many feathers, really. I've tried to kind of, in some ways, restore the coarseness of the book, because Wuthering Heights scandalised Victorian society. It was called violent, it was called savage. These are the reviewers at the time who gave it these terms. You know, it was classed as an immoral book. It didn't have a clear moral like, you know, a Dickens book or a Thackeray book or other writers of the time. You couldn't put it down and say, that's what that was about. It's actually quite troubling, because you read the book, you get to the end of it, and you're not really clear who you're supposed to...
There's no resolution.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I know that from, as I say, not reading. I'm not trying to pretend that I've read it, but from watching various adaptations of it.
Yeah.
But I am going to read the book. Did she initially write it as Ellis Bell, or did she work on other things and then release this as Emily Brontë.
Yeah, I mean, all of the sisters published originally under pseudonyms, and Emily Brontë's was Ellis Bell, yeah. They were found out, basically. They were called out, and they had to come clean, and they had to admit who they were.
Yeah.
I don't think Emily was comfortable with that, really. I think she would have preferred to have published under, well, as she did originally, you know, and to carry on like that. I don't think she sought fame. I don't think she had ambitions as a writer. Unlike Charlotte, who was very driven, very ambitious, I think Emily really was a misanthrope. She had no interest in people or society, really, I don't think.
Mm. We are in the middle of the book club. We are talking about the new book, Ill Will, by Michael Stewart. We'll get more from Michael in a moment's time after a bit of music from Bob Marley and the Wailers. It's BBC Radio Leeds. Your correspondence, if you'd like to get in touch, 81333. Start that text with the word Leeds, or it's 0345 303 3333. 22 minutes past two. Bob Marley and the Wailers. Is This Love on BBC Radio Leeds? We're in the middle of the book club at the moment, 25 past two. News on the way. Michael Stewart is with us, the award-winning novelist, short story writer, poet, stage and radio dramatist, and head of creative writing at the University of Huddersfield. His new book is called Ill Will. It charts the lost years of Heathcliff from Wuthering Heights. We were saying just a minute ago about how obviously protective the Brontë community is. Michael, over the reputation and the name and the history of this. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that this invokes such passion in people, the Brontë name, people from all over. I've spoken to people from Japan and America and China that have come over because of the Brontes. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think, first of all, it's a very interesting backstory, isn't it? I think the family's a very interesting family. Patrick Bronte was born really, you know, in utter poverty in Ireland. He was mentored. He won a scholarship to Cambridge. He went from rags to riches, really. And always kept the politics there. You know, he'd seen poverty, he'd experienced it. He was an abolitionist. He fought for women's rights. He fought for workers' rights. So he himself is an interesting character. But then his children were home educated. I mean, Charlotte, Anne and Emily, because of the death of the first two girls, were home educated. And they had access to materials that most women at that time wouldn't have had. So they read Byron. Walter Scott, writers like this, who were just not seen, you know, fit and proper, really, for young women to study. So they had a very, very different outlook, I think, you know, if you like. And I'm doing that inverted commas thing again. I know the listeners can't see it, but, you know, they had sort of a male perspective in some ways, and a very kind of, I think they were given license. I think Patrick was a very progressive thinker. And I think they were given license to kind of write what they wanted, which is why Jane Eyre, to a certain extent, was also received with some, there was some sort of scandal around that novel. I mean, not as much as Wuthering Heights. And The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, which is Anne Bronte's second novel, you know, it deals with domestic violence and it doesn't pull its punches. It's a brutal book, it deservedly so. I mean, it needs to be because of the subject matter. But I think they were just writing about things that you know, I mean, the Victorian novel was quite a decorous art form, you know, and it tended to have, you know, a middle-class audience, a middle-class subject matter, and they were writing about class in a way that I don't think those writers were. You know, Heathcliff is a working-class character, isn't he? So I think the from the very outset, their subject matter and the way that they approach their subject was very, very different to their contemporaries.
Let's have a word about the TV deal, if we can. I'm not sure what you can and can't say, but it's been signed up for a TV deal by the people that make Broadchurch.
It's Kudos Films.
Kudos. They make loads of stuff then, don't they?
They've made a lot of stuff, yeah. The recent thing is Troy, that's on at the moment. Before that, it was Gunpowder.
That's one.
In November. So they, I mean, but
Tin Star as well.
That's one of theirs. Yeah, I mean, they've done some really, really interesting shows. They did Utopia, which is Channel 4. They did a fantastic adaptation of Louise Doughty's Apple Tree Yard, which was a really, really sensitive.
That was great.
And you know, a quality adaptation, really. So they're a very interesting company, really. And before we did the deal, you know, they were on my radar, and I was very interested in what they were doing.
So when will we see it on the telly then?
Well, I just don't know. I mean, they bought the option, and you know, the thing now is that they want to attach a big writer, a big script writer, a big TV writer. That's quite a small world. There's only maybe half a dozen or so A-list TV writers. All of those writers are in demand, you know. So they're wanting to attach one of those writers to the project. And I think that's the kind of sticking point now, is to get that last part of the piece together, really.
Could you not do it?
I'm not sure it would necessarily be a good idea.
Right.
I mean, I think one of the things that why Apple Tree Yard was so good is it wasn't Louise. And Louise is a fine writer, and I love the novel Apple Tree Yard, and I love her other novels. But they did something quite brave with that adaptation. You know, they took something that was towards the end of the book and put it right at the start. Now, would Louise Doughty have done that? Probably not. I think as a writer, you tend to stick to, you know, you've worked the
plot out
yourself.
It's your baby, isn't it? You know what it is. Yeah.
You've worked the plot out yourself, and you kind of you can't really see it going anywhere other than the direction you've sort of made for it. So I think you have, in a way, sort of less freedom as a writer of your own work.
Mm. Speaking of direction, did you get a Rolls Royce or a Bentley out of it or anything like that? A helicopter here today?
Well, you know, I've come in on my helicopter, obviously, today.
Yeah. Listen, it was lovely to get you back in the studio again, Michael. Good luck with it. And I can't wait to see this on TV. But I will have read the book by then. I can guarantee you've got my word. I'm going to start it this afternoon. All right? I promise you.
That's a guarantee, isn't it?
That's a guarantee. It's a guarantee.
I'll hold you to that.
I'll tweet you and show you a picture.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Michael Stewart, the book is out now. It's called Ill Will, and it charts those mystery years, the lost years of Heathcliff from Wuthering Heights. Thanks very much, Michael. Cheers.
Thanks.